Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Business Accelerator Call. This is Lisa Minini with Accelerate Associates, and I'm so glad that you're here. Today, you will learn how small businesses can avoid costly real estate mistakes. So if this is your first Business Accelerator Call, welcome. And your business is growing, and you may need at some point to rent some space to really keep up with that growing demand. But if you select a space too large, you might be pilfering your profits. You select a space too small, and you'll be spending more money on moving expenses before the year is up. So today I've got a great treat for you. Today you will discover how to assess your needs before starting your site selection. Understand, and this is regardless if you're, let's say you're just getting started and you don't need a lot of space, but you do need some space to meet clients. There's some real juicy tips here today for you as well. Or maybe you have outgrown your business, or maybe you just own your own space. Whatever situation you're in, on today's call, you will get a lot of value. You'll also understand why knowing the total amount of monies due over the lease term can mean the difference between a misstep or a wise leap. And we're also going to cover how to spot where they bury hidden costs in your lease and what to do about it. So it's going to be a really fascinating conversation today. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this and I introduce my guest, I want to make a couple of quick announcements. As you know, we have half-day profitability labs that are happening in Canton, Michigan at the Accelerate Associates headquarters on Ford Road. So would love for you to join us or a business owner you know. We have a lot of upcoming events. Profitability lab introductions. These are half-day events where we really focus on your business, not only in Canton, but in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So we've got a new lab leader out there who is having introductions. So just go to profitabilitylab.com for the latest and greatest dates of those profitability labs. We'd love your referrals, so any business owner that you know that is juggling a lot of things and really wants to put things together in their business so they build a profitable business they love, I'd love the referral to our profitability labs. And don't forget April 25th and 26th in Farmington Hills, Michigan, where you will be at the Wake Up Profitable. So we're really excited this year. We are busy working to have over 100 business owners there. The networking will be great, and of course, the new enhancements to the Entrepreneurial Ed system, the system that you will learn in its entirety during those 2 days, so you'll be able to work on your business, not just in your business. So without further ado, I want to introduce our wonderful guest today, by the name of Lynn Drake. Lynn is president of Compass Commercial, and her status is well known in the industry. She's the commercial realtor focused on maintaining true north for her corporate clients. You want that line to always be going in the up position. And it's a reputation built on 20 years of commercial real estate experience and expertise in corporate and institutional workplace design, planning, and project implementation. Now, Lynn became a commercial realtor in 2001 after 15 years in corporate real estate, during which she initially managed and leased industrial real estate across North America and for Central Transport, then directed real estate and facilities for 1,000 Kelly Services branches in the United States and Canada. And thus far in her career, Lynn has successfully completed over 2,500 real estate transactions, ranging from small business tenant leases to the sale and purchase of industrial complexes, inclusive of helping a lot of nonprofits. Lynn has been the strong supporter of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and served as the City of Troy Planning Commissioner. She was featured on Florine Mark's Remarkable Woman Show and received Crain's Detroit Business 2007 Real Estate Excellence Award. Lynn Drake also joined the ITRA in 2010, and she was honored by the Michigan Seed as an Outstanding Achiever for Oakland County, Michigan. She was also inducted into the Hall of Fame by the Midwest Real Estate News and honored for her leadership by the Southeast Girl Scouts of America in April of 2015. So, Lynn, welcome to the Business Accelerator Call.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wow. Like, wow. You have all this experience. You're the go-to person. Tell us a little bit about how Compass Commercial differs from, you know, kind of other types of services that a business owner might want to know about as it relates to commercial real estate.
Well, we're different than a traditional real estate brokerage firm, a commercial real estate brokerage firm, because we exclusively represent tenants and buyers of office and industrial real estate, not only here in the Detroit market, but across North America. Most firms represent landlords and tenants.
Okay. So the different types of real estate agents, what might those be?
So it's really interesting because there's all kinds of different real estate agents. Most people think real estate agent, they think residential.
Mm-hmm.
But there are companies like Marcus Millichap that does nothing but investments. So if you want to do an investment, you want to go over and work with them. There, some brokerage houses break up the work by geographic area. So you might have a team of 5 to 6 people that are going to handle North Troy, and they do the office, the retail, and the industrial space within that market. In retail space, generally what we find is that the people in that space work exclusively in that space. So I'm not a big fan of somebody that tries to do everything. In other words, they could work the whole state of Michigan. They do office, industrial, real estate. They do investments. I don't think that's a good way to go because you're not an expert in anything. So we chose to represent tenants because I spent so many years in corporate real estate, and that made me comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Now, who is your ideal client?
My ideal client would be a business that has a minimum of $1 million in revenue, up to $50 million in revenue. They're generally in the service industry or the manufacturing industry. And they could have one single office, or they could have up to 200 offices, and we would manage all the real estate activity for them across North America.
Mm-hmm. So share with us a little bit. I know that your ideal client are bigger, larger small businesses. But what about that person that's getting their business started and they need to meet with prospects or, you know, prospective clients or have a meeting? Is there other types of office space available for them?
Yes, an executive suite is a great option for a startup company. An executive suite, there's a couple of firms that are really large that do that across the country. And there you can go and you can just lease an address, so all your mail goes there. If somebody shows up at their door, they just tell them you're not there at the moment, and then they'll let you know that the person has dropped by.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to the next level where you lease office space 4 times a month on a certain day so you can bring people in, or you just lease space for your conference room as you need it. So or you can just have a single office. So there's like 4 or 5 different ways you can lease those spaces. The other thing that's been really up and coming in the last few years is a lot of the counties are getting into this executive space. And so, you know, in Detroit, many people are familiar with Tech Town.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their own place where you can go, and they'll not only help give you you can rent some space pretty inexpensively, but they also have people there to help you grow your business. So that's become bigger over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. You have grown your business hugely successful, and you chose to focus only on representing users of buildings versus representing landlords of buildings. Now, why did you choose to do that?
Well, kind of a funny story. Just going back, I was working at Cali Services, so So I had 15 years in corporate real estate, and actually one day I decided to go climb a mountain, believe it or not, and I spent 8 days on this trail climbing this mountain, and I realized I needed
literally, to, you literally.
I climbed a mountain, and I knew I needed to make a change. And coincidentally, around the same time I took a test, they told me I was in the wrong field. I should have been in sales. Well, I already know real estate, so let's go into real estate sales. So when I became a broker, I went into a traditional firm that does landlord and tenant representation. I was the only tenant rep in the office. They didn't really care for that. And I came back one day. I had been showing one of my clients space, and I happened to show him a space that was listed by the firm that I was working for at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to come into the president's office upon return, and then I was told that I needed to push or use whatever effort I could to get my client to take the listing that my broker had. And I said, that feels unethical. And he said, it's not unethical, it's the law. In the state of Michigan, if you have a listing, the rights of the landlords that you're listed with come before any rights of the tenant. And frankly, I, having spent so many years in corporate real estate, I couldn't swallow that. I was actually fired because I just couldn't do that. I couldn't put the landlord's rights first.
Mm.
So I decided at that point to go to an organization that listed that only worked with tenants and buyers.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you work in Michigan. Do you just work in the Detroit area in Michigan?
I work the entire state. And in fact, I've done about 40 I've worked in 40 states across the country in North America as a broker. And the reason I do that is because I spent so many years in corporate real estate working
mm-hmm.
on a national basis.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to work nationally. And I belong to a group called International Tenant Representative Alliance, where I have other members that have primarily corporate real estate experience, and we only represent the tenants. So I can use them to do my tours and that kind of stuff, and then do the negotiations. So it's a great organization to belong to and allows me to work pretty much anywhere in the world.
Mm. So it can be really a daunting task for a lot of businesses that, you know, this could be a big overhead expense for them.
Mm-hmm.
And even getting started, even starting their search can be overwhelming. How do you assess your needs and, you know, before you start going out and selecting a site?
That's a good question. I think it really starts with culture. What is your culture? Do you work in an environment where everybody's in the same space and they're communicating? Or perhaps you're a doctor and you've got HIPAA laws, and when they're talking to their clients on the phone, they can't be in an open area. So how do you want your space to be? That's really crucial before
mm-hmm.
you start working. Who should have private offices? Who should be in an open environment? Are you training? Are you teaching? What are the needs of your space? So we usually start with culture, and then we look at how many people that you're going to have in your space, and then we look at how they're going to use that space, which is what I kind of talked about. You know, open offices, private offices, and then we total up what we need, and we add, so if we said we needed space for 20 people, and so many are going to be in cubes, or 6x6, 10 people times 6x6 is one number, and then let's say you have 10 people in privates, and they're 100 square feet each, so you kind of add all that math up, and you add about 40% to that, and that gives you an idea of how much space you need. But generally when we work with a client, we actually sit down and do that for them to help them, because we've done a lot of deals. We can kind of help them work through who should be in open, who should be in closed, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you determine how much space you need to look at your budget. So literally I've had people come to me, they say, I want 5,000 square feet, but my budget is $500 a month. And that's really not possible. But it does happen. I've been asked. So, I skipped a step. So before you figure out, now you've got your square footage, you need to figure out what kind of building you want to be in. So
mm-hmm.
you want to be an industrial building, or you want to be in an office building. You can do office work in an industrial building, but you cannot do industrial work in an office building. So you need to identify what kind of building you need to be in and why, and the reasons behind that. Because in an industrial building, the rents are significantly less money, but then you're probably going to have warehouse space that you don't need. But those are just the different things. So then you figure out your budget. So I was talking about that a minute ago. If you go to LoopNet, that's a online program that has listings of space across the country.
Mm-hmm. And is that LoopNet.com?
Yeah.
LOOPNET.com. LOOPNET.com. Okay, got it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good place to get some ideas of what it costs.
Oh, great.
So it's a good resource if you want to do that. But somewhere in this, while you're doing your research, it is helpful to hire a commercial broker, preferably a tenant rep that specializes in the area that you're looking for.
Okay. Do you have any, so if somebody is interested in hiring a commercial real estate agent, do you have any contacts?
Yeah, they can contact me at info@compass-commercial.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're interested in getting a spreadsheet that will help them figure out the square footage that they need, we would be happy to send that to them as well.
Okay.
Send me an email and let us know that you'd like to get a copy of that space analysis.
So does this take a long time to find space?
Yeah, usually we ask tenants for 2,500 square foot or less to put aside 3 to 6 months in the site search, or up 9 months to a year for a larger transaction. I personally spend on a smaller transaction 40 to 60 hours just on research, preparing our requests for proposals, financial analysis, setting up tours, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. And what's the cost of hiring an agent?
Just like in the residential market, the landlords or the sellers generally pay the commission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, is that one of the hidden costs, though? I mean, won't the cost of that be passed on to a tenant in the rent?
Sometimes it could, but in 90% of the cases, it's not. Generally, if there's not a broker involved, a real estate agent, the commission actually goes to the property manager. And I want to give you an example. This just happened less than 90 days ago. I was working with a client. The landlord had leased their space out from underneath them because they were on a month-to-month lease, and they had been that way for 6 years. And finally they found somebody that wanted the entire space because the space was too big for them, and they gave them a 30-day notice to move. So I got an emergency call. We need to move immediately. The landlord approached them after I started working with them to find him that space in 30 days. And he told the tenant not to include me in the negotiations for their current building.
Hmm.
And I wasn't too excited about that because my contract allows me to negotiate that part. And I told that to the client. So the tenant went back to the landlord and said, look, you're going to need to bring her into the equation. So it was pretty interesting to me when I got the written proposal from the property manager that was supposed to be such a great deal, and that proposal was actually over market, and that property manager was making the assumption that that tenant would never know that they were giving them an over market price. So when the deal was total done, we went back and we looked at, okay, what did the landlord pay me, and what did we negotiate on the tenant's behalf?
Mm-hmm.
So we negotiated a fee, or we negotiated reduced rent, improvements, all that kind of stuff, and a lot of free rent for that tenant, and the savings was 12 times what I made on the transaction.
Mm.
So then we went back and we looked at the last five deals, and 10 to 15% was the average savings that we've done in the last five deals. 10 to 15 times what we earn, not percent.
Wow.
Times.
Wow. That's a big chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about what business owners need to know. You talk about the total amount of monies due over the lease term. So what does that mean exactly?
Okay, well, let me just start by saying that in the residential market, if you're a buyer or you're a seller, the government has stepped in and set rules so that you can't get tramped on.
Okay.
In the business world, there are no rules because we are business owners and we're supposed to know better. Right? So that's kind of, so it's like buyer beware. And the reason that's, the thing that's really interesting about my business is there's office space, there's industrial space, there's retail space. Those are the three types of space that we usually see. Office space, they each have their own way of charging. So in an office space, we might see a gross lease. A gross lease should mean that the tenant pays one fee per square foot, and that's it, right? But what we usually see in a gross lease is called a modified gross lease. A modified gross lease means that the tenant pays the base rent, the price per square foot, plus electrical. And by the way, the electrical I've seen anywhere from 70 cents to $1.50 a square foot.
Wow.
So you need to know what that cost is. And then there would be the cost to run the buildings, and that you would pay a percentage of increase over the annual cost. So, like, let's say that you lease a building, and in the year you lease it, the cost to run that building is $7. So you don't pay that fee directly, but if in year two it's $7.25, you're now paying 25 cents more per square foot for those common area maintenance charges. And people don't know that. That's one thing. And then you flip it around to industrial space or retail space. They lease their space out on a triple net basis, which means you're paying the base rent, plus you're paying all the taxes, you're paying all the insurance, you're paying all the common area maintenance, and if you're not super careful, you'd be paying for any maintenance to the building. So you have to be really careful and really know the right questions to ask so you really know what you are getting. It's really critical.
Wow, so you could be paying a lot more out than you had originally thought if you thought it was a square footage amount and you're doing the calculations but not realizing there's other things involved, which gets me to my next question. Let's talk about the hidden costs. What do you mean?
Well, hidden costs, one example would just be the electrical. I could show you five buildings and I could get the rates all over the place. That's one hidden cost. But the real hidden costs are in some of the clauses in the lease. For instance, let's say that you outgrow your space and you need to move to another building and you want to find someone to step into your shoes and sublease your space. The landlord might charge you $1,000 to $2,000 just to do that transaction. Did you know that?
Oh.
Or the landlord might have the right to relocate your space if a tenant next to you needs to expand. So if the landlord relocates your space, then you're expecting the landlord's going to pay all those fees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. So you have to make sure that when you're doing a lease, you read the lease to see, okay, if he has a relocation clause, what expenses are they going to cover? It's more than just the moving company. It's more than the van. You've got computers, which movers don't move. You've got wiring. You've got phones. Stationery. You might have put something specific into your space for your use that you want to take with you, and the landlord's not going to pay to move it. So there's a lot of things, and if you don't read the lease, you're going to miss them. And on that same note, what I really want to emphasize is not only should you read the lease, but you need to hire a real estate attorney. A lot of people use their business attorney, and their business attorney might have not ever done a real estate deal. You know, they went to school for it, but they're going to miss all the important nuances in a lease if that's not what they specialize in.
Okay. Now, you talked, too, I remember you mentioning once before to me that you worked with a dentist to get him some new office space, but his lease required
him. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah, so this was a dentist up in Oxford. He did not read his lease. And the lease called out that if there are any capital improvements to the building, he would be responsible for his share of the building.
Wow.
And sure enough, come along, the last year of the lease, the roof goes, and he paid for 50% of the roof. There was nothing he could do. He signed the lease. He didn't read the lease. And that's another big thing is the HVAC units in these buildings. Sometimes the landlords expect you to maintain them, and then you need to put caps around. If you're going to maintain them, you're not going to have to replace them.
Mm.
You don't want to be in a 3-year lease and get into the second year of the lease, and it needs a new HVAC unit. It's your responsibility.
Right.
So you got to be really careful with those. And these are questions you should be asking before you're leasing or before you're signing.
So you would recommend that business owners hire an attorney, but one that specializes in commercial real estate and actually has a track record?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Now, what else? What else do business owners need to make sure that they don't miss?
I think one of the most important things that I hope people take away from this call is timing.
What do you mean?
If you have a lease and it expires on, let's say, March 31st, and you stay 3 days, you might be responsible for 150% or 200% of your rent for the entire month. And that is spelled out in your holdover provisions of your lease.
Mm.
So what I ask tenants to do is pull their lease out. In fact, when they get off this call or listening to this thing, go pull all your office lease, your industrial lease. Look at the expiration date. Note it in your calendar. Look to see if you have a right to renew your lease. Put that date in your calendar, and then take the renewal date and back up 3 to 6 months, depending on the size of the transaction, and put that date. That is the date you should start deciding whether you're going to renew or relocate your space. Because if you don't and you miss all these dates and you get up to March 31st, your rent is going to skyrocket. I'm going to give you an example. Somebody that was working for us was at their doctor's office, and they overheard him talking to his landlord about having to move. Well, the doctor's lease had expired a month before the landlord called him to discuss renewing the lease. In this particular case, it was a doctor. And when you're doing medical space, it's slightly different than a regular office lease. And the doctors have to put their own improvements into the space. When this doctor leased the space, he didn't have the capital improvements to put in the sinks and the necessary things. So he basically took a loan from the landlord and paid the landlord back like a car loan over the term of the lease. So let's say his rent was $15 a square foot. The improvements, if you treat them as a car loan, were $8 a square foot. So now he's paying $15 plus $8. So he's paying $23.
Mm.
And in this particular instance, he was paying over market. By the time his lease expired, he was paying about $5 over market, because you had that extra money in there. So
wow.
As an emergency, we ran out, found him space, ready to go. He calls the landlord. He says, look, I'm sorry, I'm not going to stay. I'm going to be moving out in 60 days, because that's how long it's going to take for my new space to be ready for me. And the landlord says, perfectly fine. You've been holding over now for 45 days, and you have 2 to 3 more months, and it's 200% holdover. And while it was actually cheaper for that guy to go out and take a loan and pay the landlord than to move, he decided to stay in the space, and he was paying $8 a square foot that he shouldn't have been paying, because he wasn't He didn't have those capital improvements. Landlord wasn't paying those anymore. And he's paying $2 to $3 a square foot over market. So this guy overpaid with $10 or $11 a square foot for the next couple years.
Wow.
It was a big hit.
Yeah. Holy cow. So what if somebody owns their own space and they may not be using all of it and they want to, you know, rent out a portion of the space? What do you recommend?
So, again, I would recommend that you hire a broker.
Okay.
And I have got an offer. If anybody wants to send me an email, I can send them a list of questions to ask that broker. Because a listing agent is different than a tenant rep agent, and people don't realize that. So the reason you want to hire a listing agent to help you get rid of your space is that it becomes their job to get the tenant to pay the most money possible for your space. Whereas a tenant rep, my job is to get the tenant to pay the least amount of money. So those are two different jobs, two different skill sets. So you want to have I put this form together, it's an article, and it gives you those two different the questions to ask so you make sure you hire the right broker. The other thing, unfortunately, about the commercial real estate industry is there's nothing to stop anybody from coming into it. All you need to do is go take a test, and you're a real estate agent. And so somebody could be 50, and people think that they're experienced, and they might have come into their third career, and they're just starting. Somebody could be 20, they started at 18, they've already got several years experience, but you think that they're too young to know what they're doing. So it's really critical that you ask the right questions of the agents to make sure you get the person that not only does what you do in the region that you do it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also recommend on that if a person has a lease, mm-hmm. heard you say this before, you recommend that before the expiration, like 9 months or 10 months
right.
before the expiration, they do,
right.
you know, they, what are they supposed to do then?
Even if they're going to renew their lease, well, okay,
mm-hmm.
so we talked about that 9 months before.
Yeah.
I want them to pull out, I want them to sit down. Does this space still work for us? Is this where we should be? Is this culturally, is this the right building? Can we afford this building? Do we need to expand? I want them to sit back down as if they're just starting over, because really they are.
Mm-hmm.
Want them to determine, is it the right building, is it the right size? And then bring a broker in to help them, a tenant rep, to help them renew. I did a deal for a guy in Troy about 6 months ago, and he had used a broker that wasn't a tenant rep to renew his lease. So this is why it's critical. And I went and looked at it. I was sick. He had been in the building for 14 years. He had paid a $20,000 security deposit to cover improvements when he moved in, which was ridiculous because it was like 3,000 square feet. And the landlord held that security deposit for 14 years. He was overpaying rent by about $6 a square foot. And when the last person renewed the lease, they did not reset the rental rate to the market. There's also, I talked a little bit about, there's an increase, you pay an increase in the common area maintenance. I talked about that before.
Yeah.
When your lease expires, your landlord is setting a new rental rate, so they should set a new base rate for those increases. So if I'm renewing a lease today, and I've been in there for 5 years, so I mean 2011, I have a 2011 base year. I'm assuming that those base year costs have gone up pretty significantly. So in 2016, I want to reset that to zero. This is our base year. This is how much it costs.
Oh.
We're setting it. And that is actually one of the biggest things that people miss when they're renewing a lease. And it can make a huge difference. You think about 5 years, and let's say, you know, it's been going up, you know, 50 cents a year. So now you're 50 times 5, you're 250 in just CAM charges. So you might have renegotiated your rental rate, but if you didn't reduce your CAM charges, you're going to be overpaying by $2.50 a square foot.
Well, I remember when we were talking one time before, Lynn, you had also mentioned to really look at the actual square footage versus sometimes the, did you say the common areas or something that sometimes they'll put in a lease that actually is not even usable space?
Right. So in the office market, not in the industrial and in the retail,
mm-hmm.
in the office market, there's rentable square footage and there's usable square footage. So the usable square footage is the amount of space within your suite. That's the usable. But when you're leasing office space, you have to pay for a percentage of the bathrooms and the corridors. So now
mm-hmm.
you want to do, so now you've got some factor, and generally that factor is anywhere from 10 to 15%. So if you're leasing 1,000 square feet and you have a factor of 10%, you're paying for 1,100 square feet. Now, sometimes people are really sneaky. I was doing a deal out in Denver a few years ago, and we sat down. We did a needs analysis determining how many square feet they needed. And the lady says, no way, no how. I already have way more square footage than that. I can't even fit in here. How can this be? So when we sent out a request for proposal from their current landlord, we asked them, what's the rentable, usable factor in the building? We're looking for 10 to 15%. He sent back the RFP. It was like 40%. And the reason it was 40% was this was actually, this makes me mix, was a nonprofit.
Mm.
They needed storage space in the basement. So he was charging them. He put however many square footage that was into the difference between the rentable and the usable figure. So they're paying 40% for basement space. It was just horrible.
Oh.
Isn't that terrible for a nonprofit?
Well, yeah, because they're so lean anyway that, you know, that's
right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, so he knew, but they didn't know the questions to ask. Why, you know, that's why she was upset with the square footage that they came up with, because she didn't realize that she was paying for the basement space because they're giving him receipts for donating space. He wasn't donating it. He put it in the factor.
Oh, wow. So it's not like he thought they would be using the space.
Well, he was donating, well, he was supposedly donating the space to them, but he wasn't.
Mm.
He was double-dipping it, right?
He's
taking a tax credit, and then he's charging them for the space.
Exactly.
And then it was basement space. So basement space is generally $8 to $10 an hour, or $8 to $10 per square foot.
Right.
And now
I knew what you meant.
He's charging them $20 a square foot.
Wow.
Because he's got it in the rentable, usable figure. I've seen a lot of weird things with those rentable, usable figures. You got to be really careful. And those are just a little idiosyncrasies in the business that you need to watch for.
What about businesses that want to own a space versus rent a space?
We do that, too. And I just met with somebody yesterday that wants to do that. Buying space is significantly easier than leasing space, but we would do a lot of the same things. We would start with what are your needs, and when you're buying space, I'm not big on a startup company buying space. In fact, I'll give you an example. I was talking with an agent. She was working with this lady that wanted to build a coffee store, and it was in a market that was in financial trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all cities are in good condition. So she was going around looking to buy this 800-square-foot space. I'm like, why would you do that? It's a startup. She's using her capital, you know what I mean? And she doesn't know if the business is going to be successful. She's never opened this kind of business. So if it's a startup business, I'm not real keen on somebody buying a building, because your business is going to grow and change, and if you want to be stuck in a building that's not going to fit you in a year or two, it doesn't make any sense. Now, conversely, if you're a business and you've been in business for a long time, or you have different offices across the country, and you're sure that that's going to be the right space for you, that works. Another situation, I was just working with a I am working with a company. They need about 5,000 square feet. We're going to look for a building at 10,000 square feet so they can have a tenant of 5,000 square feet until they're ready to expand into the balance. And if they never grow beyond that, that's okay because they can keep a tenant in there. So it just depends. And the other thing about purchasing buildings is there's also SBA loans.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get in for about 10% down, which is pretty cool. One thing that people don't realize when they're buying a building is the mortgages, while they might be amortized over 20 or 30 years like a house, the term of the loan with the bank is anywhere from 5 to 10 years. So you have to keep reapplying for mortgages.
Oh.
So if the value of your building goes down, while you're, which in some depressed areas it has, and then you come back up and you've got tenants and they're not paying enough money to make the mortgage, you might lose the building, which is kind of what we just saw back in 2008, 2009, because the cash flow coming in from the rents can't cover the mortgage, so that's, so unless you can sell your building really quick, you're going to lose the building. So buying a building is a great idea for a business that is set, or perhaps they know they're going to have multiple locations, but not for startups. Or if they have something really unusual, you know, plants, a perfect example. You know, they have a lot of things inside their buildings that are unique to them, and to move a plant is really expensive. So in that instance, you know, you've been around a long time, you want to own your building.
Okay. What are the common mistakes that you see that when business owners call you and say, hey, you know, we're looking at space, what do you find that they haven't done that they maybe should have done before calling you?
I get calls a lot of time, referrals from the county or a chamber and things for deals that have gone wrong. And generally, it kind of goes back to the costs in the build-outs. They didn't understand in retail, you know, that the base rent was 12, but there's the triple nets were 6. I've seen that. The other mistakes, the biggest mistake I see, people want to do their own deal, so they'll go and they might, the smarter ones will go and ask the neighbors what they paid. But the issue with doing that is it's not just what they paid, but how much free rent did they get? How many improvements did they get? So if I'm doing a deal and I'm only paying $6 a square foot, but I took the space as is, that's a different situation where I'm paying $8 and the landlord put $5 a square foot in improvement. So people don't always understand what we call comps. In the residential market, it's easy. It's this many square feet, it might have this upgrade, and you adjust. But in the commercial real estate industry, there are a lot of factors that you have to take into account, which is one thing I didn't talk about. Whenever we do a deal for our clients, we always do a financial summary. And the financial summary breaks down all of these costs so you can see them. And I think people don't understand, I think I mentioned before, they don't know the right questions to ask even. But you need to have a broker that's going to do a financial analysis for you so you really know what the true costs are going to be. Let's see, other common mistakes. Sometimes people don't understand types of buildings, so I'll give you an example. If you have a Class A office building, that means that you have a cafeteria, you have an atrium, all that kind of stuff. You have a lot of amenities, perhaps a gym, right? And then there might be a building down the street that's a B, B-minus building, which means that it might have the cafeteria, but the building is old and it's not been maintained as well. And then you have a C building, which is there's some obsolescence to the building. Like, let's say it's a three-story building. It doesn't have an elevator. When people are going to look to lease these, they don't always realize the Class C building and the Class A building, the rent should be significantly different. I've seen that. So they think they've gotten a good deal when they really haven't. The biggest thing I see is people call the broker's name who's on the sign of a building. And I think I mentioned before, their job is to get you to pay the most money. Never call that broker. You do not want a broker that has all the listings in the market because they'll never represent you. They're representing landlords. I think that's the biggest mistake I see. They meet the listing agent, and they like them, and they think, oh, okay, they can do it for me, rather than realizing that what their real job is.
Okay. So really there's ABC classes of buildings.
For office, yes.
For office buildings, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, but the rent is going to be significantly different based on the amenities of that particular building.
Correct.
And how would a person know that? They would only know that by working with you?
Well, I can give you the definition. I mean, I kind of did. A Class A building is a newer mm-hmm. building. The thing where people get kind of confused is the A building and the B building, because there are some B buildings that kind of look like it, but they're just older.
Okay.
The A building is supposed to have been renovated, the lobby's renovated in the last 7 years.
Okay.
I mean, if the lobby's out of date, it's not an A building.
Okay. I got it. Interesting. Okay, great. You know, Lynn, you've given us a lot of really great information. Tell us a little bit about where people can find you. What's the first step that you want them to take if they have a need for their commercial real estate?
Sure, thank you. Well, they can either, if they're looking for some space in the Detroit market or across the country, they can call us at 248-817-5400 and ask for me, Lynn Drake. Also, I wanted to refer them to the website, which is www.compass-commercial.com. And the reason I want to refer them to the website, if you go to the blog section, mm-hmm. there are over 100 blogs written about all the issues that you could come up with that I have seen over the years with leasing space. Give you some ideas if you want to learn more about commercial real estate.
Fantastic. And again, that's Compass, C-O-M-P-A-S-S dash commercial, commercial.com. And Lynn can be reached at 248-817-5400?
Correct.
Okay, great. And any last tip or golden nugget that you want to leave?
Oh, boy.
Because you've already given a lot.
Just do your research. If you don't want to use a broker, use the Internet to do your research.
Mm-hmm.
But don't. If you're going to go without a broker, make sure you have an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do your due diligence.
Do your due diligence, yeah, because really, when I go after spaces with clients, we go after 3 locations at the same time
mm-hmm.
because then you can really see the difference between the landlords and what they're offering and all that kind of stuff. It helps you make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Lynn, thank you so much for being on the Business Accelerator call. What you shared today was just so, just so profound. I don't know that a lot of even business owners know that they can get the kind of help that you provide. I think a lot of times business owners go into it and think that they need to negotiate with the landlord directly, but it's nice to know that you have services available for them.
Well, thank you, Lisa. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
You too. And thank you for coming on to the Business Accelerator call. And until next time, create a great life. Bye, everybody.
Bye.